How many of you have a 2 a.m. friend? You have a 2 a.m. friend. Irma, what does that mean to you? Somebody that brings you peace that you can count on. Absolutely. Anybody else? Mel, 2 a.m. friend?
My mom.
Your mom. Yeah, yeah. Yes, you can stay. She's still awake at 2 a.m. That's the rain. Ashley?
Yeah, a few people whose sleep schedules are completely messed up, so they're awake and stressed.
What's up with all these people awake at 2 a.m.?
I'm awake at 2 a.m. because of work.
Yeah, because of work, right? Yeah, you can call Ashley, she's working. Anybody else? Yeah.
They have you on the
do not disturb. Yes, yes. They don't have to call like six times for it to work or whatever. On my Facebook memories yesterday, one of my best friends had posted, this was probably like 10 years ago, but he said that him and his buddy, one of my other friends, was sitting at a church service. And this was not the church that we grew up in. This was years later. And this pastor was telling this story about somehow a cemetery was brought up. And he made some comment. I'm just going to quote it. I don't agree with it necessarily. He said, only girls or people at 2 a.m. scream in cemeteries. All right, this is what the pastor said. Okay, whatever. And my friend looked at my other friend and said, or Jesse. Or Jesse. Which means there's a story that years before, around 2 a.m. actually, me and my buddies, we thought it would be a good idea to go through a cemetery. I think like we had just got our driver's license or something like that. And we weren't up to too much mischief, but we thought we saw something. And so I did scream. It was 2 a.m. So that was to my thing. So, but that same friend, actually this morning, he texts me. And much more serious, he said that someone that he dearly loved had just gone to the hospital last night, and he had asked for prayer for that particular individual. And so I've got this friend who we've got a deep history of common experiences, but then we've also got the seriousness of life and relationship together. And I want us to talk a little bit today about the importance of those sorts of friendship, those deep, meaningful friendships. You know, 2 weeks ago, we started this series on friendship, and we talked about how we are the most connected that we could ever be, but we're lonely, right? Pull out your phone. You can be connected. You can be on a group chat. You can be following people. People can be following you. But at the end of the day, we often feel lonely because we're connected, but we're not. We don't have those deep friendships. And then last week, I challenged us to look at what would it look like to have a vulnerable relationships, to take risks and share who we are. Now, we talked about how we have to do that in a safe way, but at the same time that we don't want to just be surface level, we want to actually share who we are because that's how God created us to be. And we've been looking at the beginning of the Bible, the Genesis story, and looking at that theological framework for how God made us into friendship. But today I want to ask us a different kind of question, and that's this. What kind of friendship are we actually looking for? And we still didn't get that to work, right? So it's on you, Dan. All right, you're my clicker today. So what kind of friendships are we actually looking for? Because again, most of us, we know a lot of people, right? We have coworkers, we have friends. We know the parents at our kids' ball games that we hang out with or talk with. We have maybe friends down in the neighborhood, maybe somebody we work out with, or even people we sit together at church, right? You guys know each other. That's one of the beauties of our church is that we do know each other. But not every friendship is the same because some friendships are built on, convenience, right? Some, hey, I just happen to run into that person because I'm already living my life. Others are built on proximity and some on common interest. But sometimes there's friendships that go deeper than that. That actually the people who stay with you through and through, these 2 a.m. friends, people that stick with you no matter what you go through or no matter what they go through, and they actually help shape who you become. They help you become a person more like Christ. They're committed to your good. And this is what we're going to call today covenant friendships. Covenant friendships. Now, I'm not necessarily saying you go around and say, hey, Io, will you be my covenant friend? You know, somebody might say, that's kind of weird. What do you mean by that? All right. So you can change the language however you want. Your best friend. Your mom uses besties, right? Okay. Yeah. Frennies, yes, frennies. Some people use besties. You know, we all got different names for it.
When I was younger, I wrote an application for friendship.
Oh, did you? Yes.
I never did it, but
no?
I wrote one up to bring to school.
To bring it to school, an application for friendship. You should bring that in, Mel, sometime. I want to read that thing. I want to see what that says. But these are friendships that have the opportunity to change your life. Not because these people have the same hobbies as you, not because they are, you know, just necessarily are doing the same things that you're doing, but because they're committed to help you become who God has called you to be and made you to be. And so I want to look at one of the stories in Scripture of where we see this take place. So if you've got your Bibles this morning, look with me. We're going to go to the Old Testament, and we're going to go to 1 Samuel chapter 18. All right, so there's 1 and 2 Samuel. It's after Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy. You've got the Joshua and the Judges. You can look at your table of contents, but 1 Samuel chapter 18. And it's the story of David, or really the king, and then of David. But in the midst of these main characters, Saul, who was king, and then David become the king. If you're familiar with the story, you know that Saul and David don't get along because Saul is jealous of David because the blessing of God was upon Saul. Then Saul made some mistakes, a distance from God, and then that blessing went over to David. But in the midst of that, we read this in verse 1 of chapter 18. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan, who was Saul's son, became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. Jonathan loved David as himself. So this is not some sort of romantic love, but it's also not transactional. It's not a convenient love. This is what we're seeing is a deep bond, a deep affection, and a commitment. And then we roll down to verse 3, and we read this. We read, Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. And Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. So Jonathan makes this covenant with David in this moment. And it's a very important word that we're going to look at today. But he not only just uses the words, but he actually does something. He takes his robe off. He basically says, hey, all that is mine, all that belongs to me, I'm giving it to you, David, as a sign of our friendship. You know, we don't talk that way in our culture, do we? We don't say, hey, I'm going to make a covenant with you. But we talk about friendships. We talk about connections. Networking, right? You know, we get on, what's that?
Friend circle.
Friend circle, yeah. We get on LinkedIn to network, right? We want to make connections in that way. But we rarely talk about this term covenant. I think a lot of our relationships are really, we don't put it in this terms, but they're more like a contract. And a contract says this. A contract says that I'll stay as long as this works for me. Right? Contract, you know, whether it's a relationship or some sort of other sort of formal document, we're saying, hey, I'm going to sign this as long as it works for me. Right? So I have a mortgage for a house, and I pay that mortgage every month. It's a contract. And I don't do it because I love Chase Bank, right? I just don't think Chase Bank just needs more money. You know what I mean? I do it because if I don't pay them, someone will come and take my house away from me or kick me out of my house or whatever. I'll be in big trouble, right? And Chase, they have a contract where I got an interest rate a couple of years ago. They wish they could give me the interest rate as it is today, but we have this contract, and so we have to stick to the terms of the contract. But it's as long as it works for me. And I think sometimes we do this in our relationships as well. We say, hey, I'll be friends with this person because it's convenient. Or I'll be friends with this person because, they're into the same sort of thing that I'm into. And so I like to talk about that. Or I like to talk about how I'm interested in that. And so I'm willing to be friends with them. But a covenant friendship says, I'm committed to your good. I'm committed to your good no matter what. It's really not about me. It's more about the other person. I should go back to that story in 1 Samuel 18. Jonathan had no reason to be a covenant friend with David because Jonathan was the son of King Saul and he was next in line for the kingdom. And so for David to do good, to have the Lord's favor, and to eventually get that kingdom was against everything that Jonathan would want from a worldly perspective, right? Jonathan's a rightful heir to the throne. He's the prince. And so if David succeeds, Jonathan loses. David becomes king. Jonathan doesn't. And yet what we see in this passage is how Jonathan forgoes all that and he chooses to be friends with David despite the things that it would cost him. And he's saying, I'm willing, I love David as myself. I'm willing to make a covenant with him, and then I'm willing to say and give my robe, give everything that I have for David. That's not how we often treat our relationships. We treat them more disposable. If people are useful, we keep them. But when they become difficult, we move on, right? We block them. We unfollow them. But a covenant friend says, I'm here for you, not because you're useful to me, but I care about you and I want you to thrive. But part of this idea of a covenant is it's us making a promise to another friend that says, I'm going to be there for you through thick and thin. And I think when we think about it in those terms, what we're saying is we're part of God's larger economy because God is the promise keeper, right? God is the one who makes promises and then follows through on those promises. God says, your life might be a mess right now, but I promise there's going to be a day when I'm going to make things right. I promise there's going to be a day when there's no more pain, no more suffering, no more tears. And so when we make a promise, we're participating in that kingdom. One of the resources we've been using, mentioned it just in early, this book, Made for People. And one of the things I appreciate that he says in this idea of covenant friendships is that one thing we have to do is we actually have to name that we're moving in this way in our friendships. That we can't just assume commitment. We actually have to start expressing it. So what he says is, hey, Emmanuel, we're becoming friends. We're getting closer. I might think that, hey, this is moving towards sort of a covenant friendship. You know, I'm ready for you to give me your robe and give me your kingdom and I'll take it all. But we haven't really talked about it. We're not really sharing verbally what's going on. We're not expressing that in any way. And I think that's what often happens. You become friends with somebody, you know, things are moving along. You think it's kind of, it's a good friendship, but we don't actually sort of express, hey, I want this to be an important friendship in my life, not just a casual acquaintance. So Early tells a story in his book about one of the guys, one of his friends was getting married. And one of the gifts that this friend gave all the groomsmen was a bottle of scotch. Okay, not important for the story, but he did give a bottle of scotch. But what was written on the bottle was the year 2035, and this was about maybe, you know, 10 years ago or so when this took place. And the idea was that in 2035, about 20 years from that moment, they were going to get back together and drink this, have a glass of this bottle of scotch. And the idea behind it was, we're still going to be friends in 20 years. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen in our lives, where we're going to move, what's going to happen with this relationship or our relationship. We don't know, but what we do know is that we're going to still be friends. So see, it's kind of a promise making, it's sort of covenant language saying, I see a future with you in it. Now, I'm not saying we should go out and buy bottles of scotch for each other, but what would it look like to make a small act of commitment towards somebody? To say, hey, I see a future in it with you. Because I think we're in this day and age where we feel like if I make one wrong move, if I make one mistake, if somebody finds out about who I really am, they're going to just get rid of me. They're just going to push me to the side. They're going to cancel me, whatever it may be. But what does it look like with our friends to say, no, I see a future with you in it? You know, hey, let's get together in a couple of months and actually get it on the calendar. Let's, call me at 2 a.m. when things get hard. Those are small things, but they're meaningful things. I know that when Emily and I were in Alabama and we were talking with PAC and Pastor Alex Chang about coming to start Kairos, one of the things that Alex said to me, he said, sort of jokingly, but he said, hey, if the church doesn't work out, I'll just hire you, you know, we'll just hire you at PAC. Now, it's not happening, okay? I don't want it to happen. I love PAC, but we're not going there. But he sort of made this promise that it was basically saying, I've got your back. We don't know what's going to happen. Because anytime you move, you start something, you don't really know what's going to happen. But the thought behind it was, hey, I'm going to make sure that you're taken care of. I'm not just bringing you up here just to do this thing if it doesn't work out, but I'm still going to be there with you. And I hope we never have to talk about that particular promise. Hold Alex to his word on that. I've shared with you that Emily and I, we have some friends that we go to the beach with. Almost every year we do some sort of vacation or something. We've been doing this for, gosh, maybe 8 years now or so. And at the end of every vacation, we start to dream about the next vacation, right? You know, you kind of sit there at the table and you say, okay, you know, we went to the beach this year. Wow, did you know that like our kids did not have a good experience or they hate the sand or we didn't even get to enjoy ourselves? Do we really want to go back to the beach? And then we start talking about other plans and thinking about things or whatever. But we start to make plans for the next year. And I know a lot of times you can get, you know, refunds and things like that, and you can reserve something and, you know, it's not, you don't lose your deposit, but sometimes you do. And there's been a few years where we've had to put down some money in preparation for the next year. And what we're essentially saying is, hey, we're still going to be friends in a year, right? We're still going to do this thing. We don't know what's going to happen in life, but we're going to make this a priority. I remember this past, or maybe it was 2 years ago, I don't need to go into all the details, but basically there was some conflict around who was making dinner and what was made and different things like that between, and a lot of it was unsaid at first, and we resolved it later on. But you know how sometimes people get, right? You start to get some conflict. And then the next day, we were supposed to talk about our next trip, and Emily and I are like, do we really want to go on this trip with these people again? You know, and you start to think about that. But you begin to work through the conflict because you begin to think about the sort of promises. So I want you to think about the relationships that you have. What does it look like to maybe express, hey, I'm here for you. I'm going to make a promise to stay with you. I'm going to talk to you about this. I got a text from a friend a couple of weeks ago. And we've become friends the last couple of years. You know, we don't have a whole history of friendship. But he said this. He said, I hope you know that nothing is off the table between our friendship. I hope you feel comfortable enough to ever bring up anything you need to bring up with me. I want you to trust that you can be my accountability, to know that you're looking after me to tell me the hard truth anytime I need it. That's a text from a friend, a pretty vulnerable text, but it created this bond. And then I shared, hey, that's how I feel too. You can do the same thing for me. And so the next time we get together, now we've got this foundation of, hey, we can go deeper here. But it had to kind of be said. And I think sometimes we leave things unsaid, and I want to encourage us to actually say those things. Flip over with me to 1 Samuel chapter 23, just a little bit later in the story. And at this point in the story, David is running for his life. Saul is hunting him. David's exhausted. He's discouraged. He's afraid. He's uncertain. And it's in the midst of this moment where Jonathan shows up again. We read this in verse 16. It says, Saul's son Jonathan went to David and helped him, say it with me, find strength in God. Okay, I didn't hear you at all. So let's try it again. Saul's son Jonathan went to David and helped him find strength in God. Help him find strength in God. It goes on to say that David said, do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel. I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, also knows this. I love this verse because what Jonathan didn't do was try to solve all of David's problems. He didn't try to make Saul disappear. It was his own father. He didn't try to fix the situation. What he did is he took David and he said, you can find strength in God. Look to God for what you need. And I think that's what covenant friends do. That as a covenant friend, we don't become the savior of our friends. We don't fix everything for them. We're not their therapist. But what we can do is we can point them back to the one who can redeem. We can point them back to the one who is faithful, who loves them. And I love how Jonathan does that because he reminds David in that moment, hey, these are the promises that God made to you. You may have forgotten those promises, but they are true for you, even no matter what you are going through. And I believe a covenant friendship allows us to point each other to the God who is there, the one who cares, the one who knows about us. One of the things about these types of friendships that we're talking about I believe the reason why they can become transformational is because they do create a sense of trust. And when we have trust, then we can also have honesty in our relationships. And I think we all want that. We've been talking about that the last couple of weeks, that we want a space where we can be encouraged, we can be accountable to one another, but you know this, if you don't have trust in your relationship, and somebody says something to you, it's taken as criticism, right? If Manu, I'm going to pick on you again just because you're right here. But if we don't have a friendship and I'm like, bro, you've got some bad breath. You're going to be offended, right? But if we're good friends and I'm like, hey, man, you know, you just got married a year ago. So, you know, it's like an hour before your wedding. I'm like, bro, your breath is bad. Like, you need to get this taken care of. You know that I'm out to help you, right? He does not have bad breath, okay? That I know of. but when we have a sense of trust, we can actually say things to each other in that way. And I think there's two things that honesty takes place. And the first is actually not the negative. It's not bad breath. It's actually encouragement. That biblical honesty includes encouragement. We looked at this when we talked about the beginning of the Bible in Genesis, that God spoke things into existence and they happened. We've been reading the early chapters of Genesis, and she's like, can I speak things into existence? She's like, Lord, please give me a toy. You know, and she's trying to do it, right? And so we're working through that theology. But God spoke things into existence, and God gives us the creative power as well, not to create toys, but to speak words of life into each other. And so it's different than a compliment. It's different than saying, hey, Tito, I like your shirt, right? Nice polo today. I mean, it is nice, but that's different than that. But encouragement is to say, hey, Tito, I know you've been going through a lot lately, but I see how you've been growing in your faith. I see how God's been working in your life. Hey, that must be a challenging time, but I see how you've persevered through that. And so what does it look like for us to actually, again, speak words of life, to speak words of encouragement over our sisters and our brothers in these covenant friendships? The word encouragement literally means to put courage into someone. And we see this with Jonathan and David. And I believe that some of us, we just need to be more, much more generous with our encouragement. Not just complimenting, not just trying to just, you know, stroke somebody's ego or something like that, but actually see where God is working in their life and speak those words over them. Now, the flip side is true as well, that biblical friendship does include encouragement, but it also includes rebuke. All right, again, you can fill in a different word for it, but Proverbs 27:5 says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. Meaning that for some of us, silence is often easier than loving our friend. But love, when we love someone, we speak. We risk the awkwardness. We risk misunderstanding. You know, love says, hey, I'm concerned about that. I've seen something in you. I think you're sort of drifting I think you're believing something that maybe isn't true. And I see how this has played out in some of your relationships. And so we have to be willing also to not just speak words of encouragement, but also say, hey, I'm going to call you out on this thing. One of my best friends, again, this was several years ago, but Emily and I had gotten some sort of tiff or something. And so, you know, I said, hey, to make myself feel better, I'm going to call my best friend and he's just going to agree with me here. And so I call him and I start kind of complaining and, retelling the story. And you know, I'm just telling it from my perspective, no sanctification, you know, no self-awareness. I'm just all like, hey, Emily's the problem. Here is me doing everything right. And I'm just waiting for him to say, yeah, Jesse, I can't believe her. You know, can you believe this? And it was after I got done talking for a few minutes, there was a pause. And my friend said, yeah, Jesse, you're a big jerk. What do you expect? And then he began to rehash all these things. And I'm like, I'm telling the story here. Like, I can't even tell it the right way to make it look like I'm not in the wrong here. But he knew both of us. And he began to call me out on my stuff. And by the end of the conversation, I'm like, oh, you're right. You're right, I need to go apologize. I didn't see it that way. Or I did see it that way, but I just couldn't admit it in the moment. But if he just would have just kind of placated me and gone on, then that conflict would have continued and he wouldn't have been the friend that I needed in that moment. So we need a friend that can rebuke us when we're wrong. And think about biblical friendship. Think about Jesus and Peter. Right? Jesus says to Peter, hey, Peter, on this rock, I'm going to build my church. Peter proclaims, Jesus, you're the Messiah. And then Jesus lifts Peter up, and then just verses later, he's like, hey, Satan, get behind me. That same passage, same moment, it's both words of encouragement and words of rebuke, but Peter needed both of those in that moment. And are we willing to have friendships to be able to do that? One final thought, and then I'm going to invite the worship team up. But again, something that Early points out in these covenant friendships is that they happen not just through activities, but they grow through conversation. I just thought this is worth pointing out. Very practical here. You're maybe wondering, how do I begin to make some of these covenant friendships? Again, I don't think it's just going to someone and saying, hey, will you be my covenant friend? I mean, Mel, you've got the application. Maybe we try that. But you know, I don't know if that's the way to go about it. Sometimes we think, hey, if I just hang out with somebody and do stuff with them, we're going to have this close bond. Maybe, but I think it actually does require us to have conversation. Maybe you're doing an activity, but the activity isn't enough, that we actually have to get into spaces where we can have conversation. So maybe you have some plans with somebody, and then you need to make sure that you make space for conversation so you can actually get to, hey, not just how was your week, but how is your soul processing through this? What are you carrying? What are you excited about? What are you afraid of right now? We have to get to those deeper conversations that's not just based in various activities. I think Jonathan, I just encourage you this week to read more of the story of Jonathan and David, because I believe that it's a great example of what God can do between two people. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up, but I want to point out that ultimately when we're talking about these friendships that we want, ultimately the every covenant friendship points beyond itself to Jesus' covenantal love. We were singing about this sort of love, and we're going to sing about it more in just a moment, how Jesus is our friend. But Jonathan, his act of sacrifice, his act of love toward David, ultimately points to what Jesus did for us. When we are in these sorts of covenant friendships with other people, we are helping people see the love of Jesus in a very tangible and practical way. In Genesis chapter 15, God makes a covenant with Abraham. And in that day and age, what would happen is when someone was making a covenant, they would actually take an animal, they would cut it in half, and they'd walk through it. And it was a sign to say that if I break this covenant, may this happen to me. The breaking of this animal and the shedding of blood, may it happen to me. And what God does for Abraham in that moment is he actually makes Abraham fall asleep, and Abraham doesn't have to walk through, but God walks through on his behalf. It's a way of God saying, hey, I'm going to take the burden of this covenant. And eventually we know that he sent his son to die for us. He's the one who loves us unconditionally. He's the one that sent his son and loved us like himself, and has taken his robe and given it to us and has called us friends. Remember, we talked about this. Jesus has called us his friends. He loves us. He's the ultimate covenant friend. So we're going to sing about this. Let's stand up with me. We're going to sing about Jesus as our covenant friend. And then we're going to take communion together. And so I want you just to spend the next few moments in worship. Maybe you want to bow your heads. Maybe you want to lift up your hands. Maybe you want to sing loud. Just remember that this sort of covenant friendship comes from our Savior, that he doesn't just ask us to do it in our lives, but he has done it. He has laid down his life for us. And then after we sing, we will come and share in the bread and the cup of communion together.